The tank tracks were all important. There were two types, steel and rubber. The rubber worked best on hard roadways and did not bother asphalt too much unless the driver used his laterals too hard. On snow, the rubber worked pretty well, and on ice, they behaved just as your car does, not much good. Do you recall that drive to join in the Battle of the Bulge on the icy roads?
We're leading it. The first tank behind me, we're going a little loose. The tank in front of me stopped, and the tank behind me, nighttime, nice and quiet. Everybody who was stopped couldn't hear a thing, except this voice coming out of the clear. Look out in the Jeep, I'm a sliding. And so we got out of the way of that tank as quick as we could, but he stopped sliding before we got to where the tank was. But that's quite a thought, thinking of a tank sliding into you without being able to do anything about it. Because the steel track on ice is like skates, like ice skates. Mm. It's worse than rubber. Rubber's bad enough on ice. But we had and I'll explain it there,
okay.
That we used small blocks of steel and welded it on a steel track. We would weld it to the track, and not too many of them, so they would cut through in heavy packed snow. They would get better traction, and on ice, they would break through the ice.
On snow, the rubber worked pretty well, and on ice, they behaved just as your car does, not much good. The steel track was best, except they were slick on cobblestone or stone block roads. On ice, they were like ice skates. Our solution was to weld half-inch steel bars about 2 inches long onto the contact surface of the track. The bar would cut into the ice or compacted snow for traction. On soft ground or mud, there was no difference. You just sunk.
You know, speaking of that, a tank has, our M4s had less weight on the ground than a person's foot.
Really?
Yeah. It was spread over such a big area that they had less than your foot. If you could walk on it, the tank could go over it, as long as you didn't jiggle the track enough to wiggle it into the ground. Or it started slipping and you didn't stop, it would sink in. But the less pounds per square inch on a track than on your shoe.
Before going into combat, we had sent most of the drivers to tank mechanics school. It paid off in the long run.
I meant to say in the States.
We
sent them.
The tanker's helmet was like a football helmet with a place for earphones. We had two types of mics.
See in the picture, it looks just like a football helmet, but you got a place on each side to put the earphones in. And you needed the helmet inside the tank because that metal is not very soft, and particularly on rough ground or something when you're bouncing around in there, you can really hurt yourself without a helmet on. Bad enough with a helmet. The steel helmet would just fit over the top of it. You took the helmet liner out and just put the steel helmet over top of the football helmet.
You bounce around in there quite a bit?
Well, you're not nearly bounced around, but you sway around. It's like riding a boat in rough seas. You don't bounce around, but you do a lot of correcting, and the metal was not forgiving when you hit it.
We had two types of mics, one around the throat. You see these in Air Force pictures where users had to hold fingers against.
Yeah, fit around your throat, and to make good contact, you just clamped your hands on it.
So sound could be heard. The regular hand mic was best, but picked up outside noise. The communication in the interior of the tank was pretty good. Push a button, and the commander could talk to crew or go on to company channel. Also available were several other push buttons with changeable crystals. The only problem, the radios were not compatible with other services. When working with the Air Corps, a separate radio was needed. One problem in cold weather was the tanker's overalls, which had no zipper or buttons. If you had on a combat jacket over the overalls...
That's what I got on. These are overalls.
Right.
They got shoulder straps and a bib. So when you had to go, it was a job.
You'd better not be in a big hurry. Going to the bathroom always was, and I guess still is, a big problem. The steel helmet fit good over the top of the tank helmet. About the helmet, from a long distance the GI and Germans looked just about alike, so it was common practice everywhere for a GI to let the straps just hang. This helped also, as in my case, the helmet flew off when you were hit, right?
Yeah, blew the helmet off. It blew the helmet off, and if it had the strap hooked, might have broke the neck,
like,
or gave me a neck ache or something, but it blew it off.
In the winter, we had a lot of problems with frostbite and frozen feet. Not so bad in our tanks, but the infantry GIs were at a real disadvantage until overshoes started arriving. Tankers had problems, but nothing like the infantry. The order was for everybody to keep one pair of socks next to their skin to stay dry. A change at least every day. Were they able to do that? To keep enough socks coming up?
No. You had two pair of socks and you kept changing them. Take the wet one off and put it inside and put the dry ones on. When they got dry inside, then you change again. Because there was not enough socks to keep coming.
The first reunion, Charlie Vincent told me that he would keep socks in his helmet.
Oh, okay. That was suggested, was to keep them inside.